Guys, thank you for soldiering in the cold. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you're all wearing jackets this morning because it's a little chilly in here. We got some heaters going. It's just the first time I've ever preached in a big jacket, so this is a new thing for me. So if I get too passionate, I might have to take it off because I get sweaty and all that. So Thanksgiving 2015. That was the date that I went over to my brother's house for my oldest brother, Alex, and we were going to have Thanksgiving there, right? And so my brother is like, wanting to do all out. He wants to get the turkey, and he wants to do the deep fry and everything, you know, and all the warnings. I sent him multiple videos of like, this is what could happen. Let's be careful. You know, I don't want you to burn your house down or yourself or me. I don't want that either. So we get there, and we're planning it all out. We got it set up in the backyard. I'm like, keep it about 15 feet away from the house. I looked up all the specs on it. I'm like, this is not going to be a disaster this morning on Thanksgiving. So he gets a pole, and we're both holding this long pole with this wire, and we're going to drop it down. So in that moment, Hannah decides to take a picture of me. And so as we're doing this, I pick up a hat, and I put it on. And so this is what developed from that moment. See, I had this majestic beard going on, and I had this awesome shirt going, and the weather was right, the coloring was right, and I'm like, man, I need that hat. And so I put is my one of my niece's fireman hats, and I'm like, I thought it's appropriate for the moment. I didn't think it through because it's plastic; it would like melted to my head if something went wrong. I didn't quite think that through, but I had this awesome picture, so I threw it up on Facebook. I'm like, got to make that my profile pic. You know what I mean? Instant, right there, boom. So I did that, and I left it up for a long time. I try to be good in social media, you know, try to keep things updated. It's nice for my friends that I went to college with and my family that I'm not around all the time, so they get to see kind of into our lives and get to be a part of what we're doing. So I put that up, and so it was up for a while, and then there was somebody that was, we got connected and had an opportunity to meet, right? And so before they met me, they went, you know, you all do this. I know you do. You go to Facebook and you vet somebody. I do it all the time. Like when somebody emails the church that I don't know who they are and they're asking me a question, I immediately go to Facebook. And I'm like, type in a name. I'm like, who is this? You know, and sometimes I can find some information, sometimes can't. You know, it helps me, you know, put a face with a name, with a question. And so this person, they went on Facebook to vet me. They're like, okay, let's check out this bill first before I go meet with them. And so when they went to Facebook, they saw, bring the picture back up, this picture, right? I think it looks great, okay? I think it looks amazing. My beard is on point. The hat is perfect fit. Posture is great. Plants behind me look awesome. I think it's great. But they see the picture and they're like, I don't know about this guy. He seems kind of weird. Their opinion, whatever. And so luckily, I was persistent enough that we ended up meeting in person and talking, and this person ended up loving me. I think loving me. I put that out there. You know, I would like to assume it was loving me. But we hit it off, and we're great friends now. And I was glad that this person took a risk and still came out to meet me. And that person is actually Tanner. Y'all don't know this, who was just leading worship. If you're new, that was Tanner. Tanner was moving to Houston, and he called a buddy of mine. He's like, hey, I'm looking for a church in the city, you know, I want to be a part of. And they're like, oh, I got a place for you. You should call Bill. And so he goes on Facebook, let's find out who Bill is. and he finds that picture. And so I had to call him a couple times. He was a little resistant. I know why now. And so later on, he told me, he says, yeah, I'll be honest with you, dude. I was a little weary of coming to talk to you, you know, hang out with you because your profile pic kind of scared me. And I'm like, okay, all right. So he judged this book by the cover, my social media cover. He judged me. And it's okay. It hurt for a little bit because I thought the picture was great. You know, that was a real hurdle in our relationship we had to get over for a couple of months. But ever since then, it's been smooth sailing, guys. It's been great. But because he took a chance on me, Tanner and I are great friends now. We're actually probably too close. I don't know, maybe. almost like family. Yeah, somebody agreed. Oh, gosh. Need some time apart. So he took a risk on me. He even though he judged this book by its cover, its social media cover. And how often are we guilty of this? How often do we have somebody new pop up in our lives and we judge them upon a moment or the way that they look? We do this. You know, I know what you're thinking. Not me. No, you do. You do it. You're human. We all do this. It's a natural thing. And sometimes it's a very safe thing to do because, you know, I just wouldn't jump in a car with anybody. You know, I wouldn't just go hang out with anybody. You know, you got to have a little bit of discernment there. But we all do this. We all find ourselves in this moment where we base judgment on a moment or an outside appearance. But then there's those times that we give them a shot. We're like, okay, let's try this. And we end up being great friends, or some of y'all you end up being married. So you take an opportunity on somebody, you end up finding that you marry this person later. It's a very common human flaw. It's very ironic. Whole sitcoms, rom-coms, as they call them, romantic comedies. If you're not hip to the game, that's because it's romantic comedies. They're built around this of judging a book by its cover and being wrong about really who they were. And so then they go through this whole scenario, and they find out who they really are, and they're like, oh, I actually love you. Let's get married and live happily ever after, and that kind of thing. So it's an ironic thing that humans do. And so we go by this term, don't judge a book by its cover. So we like to think that we coined this. Yeah, we coined that phrase, but the concept is not new. The concept of not judging somebody just because of an appearance or something they did in a moment, that's nothing new. It's been around for a long time. So Jesus, in his time, when he would, in his ministry days, he was very diligent in what he did. Very diligent. Don't mind the screaming. That's probably my kid. Nobody's dying or anything. But sorry, I didn't want to scare anybody. I just had to point that out. My ADD, that it was catching my ear. So he was very diligent in his speaking and what he did. And so he would go to, he like when nightfall would hit, he would go wherever and go in the wilderness and pray. And then as soon as morning came, he would be back and some and where the people are. And so where he would crowd around is usually in front of the temples. So the temples at these times, it's not like now. So like a church, there's not a whole lot of foot traffic in front of a church during a week. But in that time, it was a ton of foot traffic. It would be compared to as like an airport or a train station. It was just kind of a hub. Everybody, even if they weren't believers, they went through that area because it was like usually in the center of the city. And so Jesus would use these opportunities, because it's transient, they would come in, they would hear it, they would hear his teachings, and it would spread fast, and there was a large number of people there, so he could hear, get to the masses. Jesus was very efficient in what he did. So, but the Pharisees were also hip to the game of where that was, and this is a lot of the time where they like to expose people. Somebody they wanted to mock or discredit, they would take those opportunities in that setting and use that against them. So we're working up to a scenario, a moment that happened. And they didn't like Jesus. See, Jesus spoke with authority, and people were eager to hear him. And so because of that combination, the leaders, the rulers, the people that were in control at that time, they got jealous, and they didn't like it. And they were very unpleased with the fact that how much the crowds loved him and were listening to him over them. And so the Pharisees were like, we got to come up with a plan. We got to debunk this dude. And so over time, they were constantly trying to throw questions at him to try to mess him up. And there's this one significant time that was very, very powerful. And the Pharisees, in this moment, when they came in, they literally interrupted his teaching. Like, just, it's like someone just jumped in here and just totally interrupted me preaching right now. And they tried to pose a question. They tried to stump him. Now, and it's always regarding sin. Typically, it's regarding something about sin. Now, let's just cover sin real quick. So sin, in this time, the Pharisees, they kind of have messed up what sin is. They treated it as this one, like if you commit one act, that sin, and you're dirty now. You're no good anymore. You deserve to be punished because of this one thing that you did. In truth, sin is anything that separates us from God. So it's not just this one act. It could be any act. It could be anything that is outside of the design of what Christ, or I'm sorry, it could be anything that's outside the design of what God created us to be and to do. And we do those things, it separates us from God. So they've messed up what sin really is. And so we're going to pick up in John 8, 2 through 11. You can see it on the screen, or if you're in your Bible app, it's there for you. Or if you're old school and you brought a physical Bible, that's welcomed as well. John 8, 2 through 11, it says, "Early in the morning, he came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And placing her in the midst, they said to him, 'Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say?' This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and he said to them, 'Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her.' And once more he bent down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with older ones. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus stood up and said to her, 'Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?' She said, 'No, Lord, no one, Lord.' And Jesus said, 'Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more.'" This is such a powerful, powerful moment in Scripture. I mean, they had the crowd gathered. They had the right situation. They caught a woman in the act of adultery. And when they came to Jesus, they called him master, when just the day before, they were calling him deceiver. So they were trying to flatter him, try to work him up, set him up so they can watch him fail. And they posed him with this baffling situation and moment. But Jesus did something I like to call it a Jesus juke. Jesus juked him in the moment. He said, "I'm going to flip this on you guys." It's okay to laugh at that. I like it. Their hopes were to ensnare him, and they were using the woman and the law to hopefully get rid of someone they saw as a troublemaker. They saw Jesus as a troublemaker, and they wanted to get rid of him, so they used this moment. Again, she was taken in the act, so there's no disputing what she did. And in this moment, as many scholars believe, so if the law is that you could be stoned for such a thing, you don't think that they would be very cavalier in committing adultery or committing sin of that nature. So they hide it very, very well. So it's believed that the Pharisees were actually in on it. Like one of them committed adultery with her. And because they did that, they had some insight so that the others could come. And they say, "We caught her in the act." And it's ironic that they would bring her to that. So a lot of scholars believe that because people would hide it very well if they were committing such a crime in that day and age. And see, the Pharisees adopted an authority that was never theirs to have. They adopted an authority that was never theirs to have. There was a judgment that they were imposing on this woman that came from a false authority. Now, it's not to say that they can't expose something. They can't say, "Hey, you're committing adultery. You should probably stop." It's another thing to come along and say, "Hey, I'm judging you spiritually, like as if I'm God, as if I am perfect." That's where the problem was, and that's when it was getting weird. So when Jesus was speaking to them, he begins to, this is so cool. This is so cool. How baller you got to be to say someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, I got a conundrum for you," and they pose this question, and you just bend down and start writing in the sand. Oh yeah, okay. Nobody knows what he wrote in the sand, But whatever it was, and it honestly, it probably doesn't matter what he wrote, because whatever, it mattered to the people that were there in that moment. It was convicting enough, it was challenging enough that it was like, okay, this dude knows what he's talking about. Some believe that he's writing their names, even though he had never met them before. Some think that he wrote a phrase saying that the judgment is mine. And one of the things they were trying to ensnare him with is that he was constantly bringing up that he was God. And they were looking for this moment where he could say that the judgment's not yours, it's not mine. But he posed the question, he who is without sin cast the first stone. See, in this time, on the law and with religion, the Pharisees had completely cluttered it up. Religion was something nasty, and it was never meant to be. There was no grace, zero grace. You committed an act that they saw as sin, as an act, and then you were punished, and sometimes by death, an ultimate punishment. So Jesus came to change things. He was coming to start something new because the system was broken. They had completely messed it up, so he had to put something in there. So what he was coming to do is not that he was wanting to take away justice. He was wanting justice with grace and understanding. See, at the end, see, that's a whole great story, but the most powerful thing happens at the end. Because he debunks, he gets rid of, he scares off all the accusers, and he turns her, where are your people here to condemn you? And she's like, there's no one here. And he proved in that moment that Jesus had, he was just, he was perfect. He had the power to judge her. He had the authority. Under the law, he could have picked up a stone and just beamed her straight in the head. In that moment, he had that. The one being on earth that could have done it, who had the authority, chose not to. He says, I do not condemn you either. Now go and sin no more. That is such a powerful moment, because anybody else on earth, and even today's age, if somebody has the authority to do something, most of the time they're going to exercise that authority because they have it. Jesus had it and he didn't. It just proves how powerful his grace was. She was punishable by law, yet she was forgiven. And the cool thing about Jesus, and of all the things that we mess up, and even in this moment, her committing adultery, which was a huge, huge thing in that time, huge. Very, I mean, obviously you could be stoned for it. Even in those moments, Jesus could take it and use it for good. He was just sprung with this situation, and he still took it and used it for good. And we find in Romans 8:28, it says, And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. For those who are called according to his purpose, if it's brought to the purpose of Jesus, whatever our mistakes are, whatever this adulterous mistake was, whatever she had done, if it's been brought to Jesus, he will take it and he will use it for good. Two powerful, powerful things there. The one that could pass judgment gave forgiveness. And then he took that bad situation and he used it for good. So again, I know what you're thinking, guys. I'm talking about judgment today. And you're like, not me. I do declare. I would never do such a thing. You know, we don't want to think of ourselves in that way because that's a negative light, that we would be judgmental. But you can and you have. Because you are a human, I can pretty well guarantee at some point in your life, in lack of maturity, you have judged somebody wrongfully. And you've even committed punishment to them wrongly. And I'm not talking about physical punishment or stoning, but social punishment. You've discarded them. You've outcasted them. You've made them feel like they don't belong. You haven't let them into your group of friends. You've done it. It's possible. So there's three aspects, three directions of judgment. Three directions of it. And the first is the obvious. You to others. You judging others. And when you do that, you're accepting a responsibility, just like the Pharisees, You're accepting a responsibility that you were never meant to carry. You were never meant to pass judgment on people. You're meant to discern. You're meant to bring things up. But if you think that you can judge their worth, that was never yours to handle. And the negative thing about it is, yeah, you could judge one and you can handle that. But after a while, you get in this cycle of judging people's actions and judging their appearances and judging who they are and their worth. You cannot handle it. It begins to clutter your life, clutter their lives. You can't keep up with it. There's too many imperfections in people. There's too many things that go wrong in this world for you to keep up with judging every little thing. So therefore, you were never meant to carry it. It was never yours to have. It's extra baggage, extra clutter that just weighs you down and makes your life more difficult. And honestly, the only one that can handle it is God. Because to truly judge somebody, you have to see their heart. We can't see people's hearts. Only God can. Only he can see it. But that's why. That's one way that we should not be doing it. And the other way, the other direction, is from others to you. We've been judged. You've faced moments, whether it's on appearance or something you did, and you've accepted their judgment. And when you accept their judgment, you're adding baggage to your life. You're adding clutter to your mind. There's a lot of times, especially from adolescence, that we can remember back and we say, hey, I remember when I was made fun of for the way I looked. Or I was made fun of that my family was poor. I was made fun of that my, whatever the situation may be, the clothes that I wore. It could be so petty. It could be the fact that you're not good at a sport. Whatever it may be, you were judged in some way. And because of that, it added baggage into your life. And it still haunts you today. You're still dragging it around. It's still with you. And as you get older, you got to go to counseling to get rid of this baggage because it gets so attached to you, confused to you. And letting somebody judge you, letting someone, not just the fact that they judge you, but you accept that judgment into your life, they have no grounds to measure your worth. They cannot see your heart. Only one can, and that's your Creator. Only the Creator can judge your worth. And thankfully, he has a lot of grace. He has more grace than anything that we could ever afford because he's perfect. He can do that, and he loves us more than anybody on this earth. So only the Creator can judge you. And what is your worth? Christ thought you were worth life and death. You were worth coming, him stepping off his throne, coming to earth, living with us, suffering, and then dying for us. That's the ultimate. Gave it all up for us. That is your worth to Christ. So when somebody comes to you and tries to tell you your worth, they have no grounds to tell you who you are. No grounds. Only Jesus can, and Jesus thought you were worth life and death. The third direction, and this is by far the worst Pharisee in our life, the worst one, and that's you to yourself. We judge ourselves so harshly. We are so mean to us. We are constantly picking ourselves apart, saying, I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not handsome enough. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough friends. I didn't get enough likes on Facebook. I didn't get enough hearts on Instagram. We laugh, but it's true. There's even psychological things about it that they've proved scientifically that it's like chemicals in your brain go off when you get that like on whatever social media platform you choose. When it happens, it's like these things release, like, oh, I have worth. That is such a false authority in your life to find worth on somebody running past a picture and clicking like. That is so shallow. There's no depth to it. And then, God forbid, they troll you. You know what trolling is? Y'all know what trolling is. Come on, you've heard of that term. They troll you and they say something negative about you. Then it's out there. It's in print. And they have no idea who you are. But we take it so personally. We do this to ourselves. We are constantly beating ourselves up. We're constantly judging ourselves. You're adding baggage and clutter to your life daily. So the same Creator, the same Jesus that told the adulterer that was caught in the act, the law was there, she could have been punished. That same Jesus that told her, I do not condemn you, saying the exact same thing to you. Whatever you've done in your life, whatever sin that you've committed, whatever has separated you from God, Jesus is saying, I don't condemn you. You're forgiven. Now go and sin no more. Now Jesus is not saying, hey, go repeat whatever it was. I'll just keep forgiving you over and over again. Whatever this mistake is, you know, whatever it may be, just go do it again and again and again. Don't worry, I have all the grace in the world. Yeah, he has a lot of grace. That's not what he's saying. He says, hey, you've been given an opportunity. You've been given a chance. He gave that woman an opportunity. Now he's saying, take the opportunity and change. He says, you're forgiven, now change. So all the things that are going on in your life that you realize, Jesus, this is just separating me from you, God. Please forgive me for this. Jesus goes, I don't condemn you. Now go and sin no more. So change. Take your opportunity, take your chance, and don't keep finding yourself in a repetition, the same spot, over and over again. See, the cool thing about becoming a sacred minimalist is you don't have to go far. The best place to start is with yourself. The best place to begin is with you. Because only you can control what you do. You can't control how other people judge you. You can't control that. You can't control social media and the reactions that you're going to get. I've tried with the church. It doesn't work. I've tried to post things out there. You can't control it. But what you can control is what you do, what you say about yourself. When you get up in the morning and look at yourself in the mirror, you can control how you talk about yourself. Are you going to build yourself up or are you going to tear yourself down? You can't get good at not judging people until you cannot judge yourself. Because when you judge yourself, you break yourself down, your self-image is low, and you don't want other people to be better than you. Who wants that, right? You want to think that you're better than people, huh? It's just selfish. It's human nature. Let's get it out there. And then you go out there, and because you set your bar low, other people's bars look higher. And so you got to put their bar down and bring them down to your level. It happens over and over. It's a domino effect. So the best place to start is with yourself. Give yourself some grace, guys. Start giving yourself grace. Let that be your New Year's resolution. Give yourself some grace. Because before you can stop judging others, we have to learn how to not judge ourselves. And so as a church, one of the worst things that a church is known for is judgment. You go out there, you ask, I was just talking to Kendall about this, and he was talking about a guy in Colorado who's starting a new church, and it's an area that it's the highest point. It's also the highest point in the U.S. That's what he said to me. And he says, so you can imagine that they're not about church there, not about Jesus, not about God. And so he would go around and he would give $5 for 5 minutes of somebody's time. And he would say, hey, what do you think of church? And he said the answers that he would get is judgment. There's a lot of different answers, but basically it comes back to judgment, that the church is here to make them feel bad about themselves. The ironic part is that this is one of the most clearest teachings that Jesus has given us, to not judge others. So the one of the most clearest teachings we are failing at miserably. We've made people think that that's what we're here to do, that Christians are here just to judge you and make you feel bad about what you do, which is not the case. Being a Christian is being a Christ follower. And Christ, in his moment, he could have condemned that woman. He had every thing at his disposal to do so. He had a crowd, he had stones, he had a reason, and he chose not to. Why doesn't the church mimic this? Why are we struggling so hard with this? And I'm going to be transparent with you guys. Village Heights, new church, about a year old, and we've launched for a year, but Hannah and I have been planting this church for about 2 to 3 years, I think. know, it's sometimes can feel like 5, 10 years. It's been a tough road. I say one of our most difficult things, because when we come and we say, hey, we're starting a new church, usually the reaction we get is like, oh, that's great. Good for you. You do you. Go after it. You know, and it's kind of like, yeah, that's awesome, but stay over there. I kind of know what you're about, so keep over there. There's a preconceived notion of judgment. They think that the fact that I just mentioned that I'm a pastor, that I'm automatically judging them. So a lot of part of what Hannah and I have had to do is rewrite what people think about church. And there's no conversation to make that happen. There's no way I can say it till I'm blue in the face, but what's made it happen is our actions, the things that we've done, the money. We put our money where our mouth is, and we've gone and done great things for this community, put a lot of money on the line. We put our time on the line. Time is very valuable. We've put our time on the line. We've done all these things, and now it's starting to work. People are going, hey, maybe they're not who we thought they are. Maybe they're not about what we thought that they were about. Maybe we should give them a try. And I was just discussing this morning with somebody that when we joined specific groups in the Heights and we jumped in with them, we paid our dues, and we're actually active with them, they're kind of almost surprised that a church is so community-driven. I'm like, wow, I thought I would have competition. I mean, it's great that I don't, you know, but that's kind of sad that there is. We've done a poor job. We've done a poor job of doing this, and that is one of our biggest difficulties here. And honestly, a lot of the things that people don't like about the church should be rejecting anyways. It's ironic. The things that we should be rejecting, we're welcoming. And it's turning church, just like the Pharisees did, it's turning things about God into something that it's not. So we have to work extra hard to backstep, to say, hey, let's go back and let's explain this. That wasn't, they were wrong, whatever it may be. And honestly, the only thing that people should not like about church, other than aesthetics, music, seating, lights, whatever it may be, the other thing is they just can't get on board with Jesus. They can't believe that there was a guy that was fully God, fully man, that died, rose again. That should be the only thing that should keep them away from church. Say, ah, it's just not for me. I can't believe it. I can understand that. I mean, if it was easy to believe, everybody would be Christians, right? If it was easy to understand, but then there wouldn't be faith. There wouldn't be things like that. So that's the only thing. This is a battle we will always be fighting, especially in the city. We'll always, because it's so diverse. There's so many people from so many different backgrounds that have been burnt by church. A lot of us are sitting here today, have been burnt by the church. I've been ministry for 12 years, and I've been burnt by the church many times. But it's not about the man sitting in the chair on earth. It's about the man sitting in the chair in the heavens. That's what it's about. And if we can keep that in the forefront, if we can become sacred minimalists and remove and throw away these things that we've added to church, added to Christianity, added to our lives. If we can remove those things and throw them away and help focus on the big man in the chair up there and what he taught us, it will revolutionize this neighborhood. It will revolutionize this city, because they will begin to see that's not truly what it was about. So to do that, it takes numbers. It takes people. It takes willingness. It takes you. Takes all of us. So I'm asking you, help us fight this conception, this idea that we're just here to judge people, when that's the opposite. We want to love people. We want to show them their worth. We want to tell them about a king that came to this world, lived for them, and then died for them. That's what we want to do. So help us do that. Help us fight. Help us minimize the negative view of the church. So the idea of judgment, the idea of not doing it, it's not a hard concept. It really isn't. It's actually very easy to do, but it's one of the things that we fail at the most. And it's the reason why Jesus had to make it so clear. in this moment, it couldn't have been more clear. Those without sin cast the first stone. So my challenge to you guys is, first, stop judging yourself. Give yourself some grace. Lean on Jesus' grace in your life. And those things that you're harboring over yourself and you're condemning yourself for and you're punishing yourself for, stop. Because most of the time, that's the reason it's still in your life. Because you won't stop thinking about it. Whatever's going on in your life, whatever sin, whatever it may be, you just keep hitting yourself with it, and so it's always in your face. So stop. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself some grace, because Jesus gave you grace. Embrace it, and you will see a domino effect. It'll go on to your friends, your family. It'll go on to your strangers, your neighbors, and it'll keep flowing out. It's infectious. It's contagious. And no doubt, when you end up, and you're out in the world, and you end up around people that don't judge, and they love, truly love people, it's like a beacon of light. People gravitate towards it, and they want to be a part of it. And that's what we want to be here at Village Heights, a beacon of light for people, the truth of who Christ really is. So help us. And that's my second challenge. Help us fight the fight. Help us continue to love and change what this city thinks about church. I love you guys. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to go all about our way, but take this to heart. Put it in action. Let this be your New Year's resolution. Become a sacred minimalist. Let's minimize the things that Jesus asked us to and focus on what matters, our relationship with him. Lord, thank you so much for today. I thank you so much for this awesome message, Lord. That moment in time where you stood toe-to-toe with the Pharisees, the people that wanted to kill you, who wanted to take you out, to debunk you, you stood toe-to-toe with them and you debunked them. Thank you so much for loving us that to the point where you would come live and die for us. Thanks for showing our worth to you. Lord, it's a worth that we don't deserve, but still you have grace for us. Thank you. And Jesus, I pray that you help us, just help us see in our lives where we're judging ourselves, that we're being too harsh on ourselves. Reveal it to us so that we begin to change. So then we can learn to love ourselves. We can learn to love others. Help us see the domino effect, God. Help us see how it works so that we can make it contagious. Lord, we love you so much. Bless this day. Bless this awesome group of people. And bless Village Heights. In your name we pray. Amen.